A very good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Big Sports Breakfast this Friday, the 1st of July. Yep, it's the first day of the month. And gee, Manly fans are going to have a spring in their step this morning after downing bitter rivals Melbourne 36-30 last night. Good morning, Jamie Rogers. Good morning, Dean Ritchie. But gee, that scoreline really flatters the Melbourne Storm, doesn't it? It was an absolute dominant performance for at least 74 minutes of the game. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, boys, and good morning to our listeners. It was an interesting game to watch, guys. And Melbourne, they did almost claw back. They scored four tries in the final 5 minutes, but it was just all too late. And Bulldog Craig Bellamy was scathing of his side and said that being tired wasn't an excuse, that if you put your hand up that you're going to play, you need to rock up and play.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. Yeah, Craig Bellamy never won to sugarcoat a loss. I always admire Craig for that. He stands up in front of the media and he says it as it is. But certainly for Manly, as much as it was a great win, and if you'd said pre-kickoff, we'll give you a win tonight by 6 points, you would have taken it. But the gloss was taken off. That final 5 minutes was a disaster for Manly, and the team song wouldn't quite have been as boisterous as what I thought it would have been.
I think the game for Manly was really won on the boot of Daly Cherry Evans. His 40-20 early in that game really set the tone for the rest of the match. It was a bit sloppy, I think it's fair to say, for both teams in the first half, but Daly Cherry Evans was really on song backing up from State of Origin. Kieran Foran was also pretty good in attack, so those Manly halves were really singing last night.
Yeah, they certainly were, Ryan. I thought both were superb. As you said, those six errors inside that opening 20 minutes, it was a miracle Manly managed to stay in front and went in at halftime well ahead. It was a good win for Manly, though, given the disaster which unfolded at Brookvale the previous game against the Cowboys. So the bounce back factor was important for Manly. They got the job done, but certainly Dez has got to get into their heads about that final 5-10 minutes, because that's the second time now that they've collapsed.
Yeah, well, they lost against the Cowboys. Thankfully, they hung on in this game. I mean, the clock was just against them, and it wouldn't have been, as I said, a true reflection of the game if the Melbourne Storm were to come over the top, because they were completely dominated. Ryan Pappenhausen, I guess it needs to say that the Melbourne Storm were down on troops. Cameron Munster didn't play from Origin with that shoulder injury. Felice Kafusi wasn't there. But Jamie, Ryan Pappenhausen was back, and it was a very off game for Ryan Pappenhausen.
Well, I watched that thinking, oh, he probably wanted to have another week off, because that was not a great performance. But just in general, I thought Melbourne, they lacked energy, and it was just soft tries that they let just running right through their team. So it was just a very un-Melbourne-like performance.
I always say the gap between Melbourne's best and worst is minimal, unlike others who have a shocker, and it becomes a 3 out of 10. For Melbourne, it's always between a 7 and a 9 out of 10. And last night, that was poor. They were off their game from the start, Melbourne, and Bellamy would be absolutely filthy. You mentioned Foran, Ryan. I thought the Foran, Harper, Saab left side was brilliant last night. And Kieran Foran, he was a brilliant young player in 2011 when he came in, and he helped guide Manly to that premiership with Cherry Evans. But I reckon Foran's in as good a form right now as I've seen him since 2011.
And there's some talent in this Manly side when they play like they play last night. What about the right centre, Kohler? Oh, my goodness, how quick
speed
he is.
Demon.
I mean, he intercepted that kick from Ryan Pappenhausen and ran 90 metres. It was terrific to see him in full flight. But the second rower as well had a terrific game last night.
Homoli.
Homoli. That try that he scored from, you know, probably 15, 20 metres out, he had no right in scoring.
He's a powerhouse. He's becoming one of my favourite players. I love watching Homoli play. Every time he gets the ball, something seems to happen. And his power is unbelievable. I know the Origin boys spoke about him. He's missed out and he won't get picked for game three. But he's on the cusp. If he keeps improving this time next year, I have no doubt he will be in that blue side somewhere.
Well, the Sydney Roosters take on the Penrith Panthers tonight, and they're outsiders, the Roosters. It was good to hear. It's always good to hear Trent Robinson talk, isn't it? Whether it be in a press conference before or after a game, and he was talking quite candidly about some big news items this week with Matt Lodge signing on with the Roosters for the remainder of the season, and also Victor Radley yesterday. Let's just talk about Matt Lodge and he seemed to be quite glowing and confident that the Roosters culture is going to be a good place for him to fit in and play his best football.
Yeah, it was interesting listening to Robbo speak about it. First of all, he said in that 90 minutes where they sat down, he saw a much more mature man sitting in front of him, a man with two children and one on the way, and also quite vulnerable about the situation he is in with his footy. But then he said, we believe in our Roosters culture. We're there to support players. And he said, as well as himself as a coach, and he said, we've done it in the past. We'll keep on doing it. And he said that this is the sort of culture that's strong enough that you bring someone in and help then make them a better player. So he was, it was quite a not glowing report about Matt Lodge, but Trent Robinson was certainly very positive about bringing him into the side and what he will bring to the Roosters that are lacking in troops at the moment.
Yeah, certainly the Roosters culture is up there with the best in the game, and clearly they do get the best out of any player that goes there. However, Matt Lodge has been to other clubs with a good culture and it hasn't worked out. So this is last chance saloon for Matt Lodge. In my eyes, if he doesn't work out this year at the Roosters, I just wonder where he's going to end up. Just for the record, he'll play for the feeder club North Sydney during the Roosters bye next week. And then, all being fair, he'd come back in round 18 against the Dragons.
And Jared Weir Hargreaves is set to come back that week too. So perhaps the fortunes for the Roosters could be turning around and we might see some better performances.
Well, every coach, I'm not directing this directly at Trent Robinson, but every coach has that ego to think that they can bring the best out in a certain player. And quite often it doesn't work, but the Roosters do have a wonderful track record in that area for any player that's been down on discipline and misbehaviour.
Do you think, though, Bulldog, they are likely to get the best out of Matt Lodge purely for what you just said, that this is probably his final chance? He needs to come out and really prove himself and prove his worth, that he belongs in the NRL, and hopefully then, whether he stays at the Roosters or goes on to another club, but these final games in this season is crucial, so perhaps we will see the best of Matt Lodge.
Yeah, I think the Roosters will bring the best out of him. Matt Lodge has got to realise, and I'm sure he does, because I've spoken to Matt Lodge, and for all his misdemeanors, he's quite an intelligent bloke. But you know, he can be earning $500,000-$700,000 a year. His career is not so much slipping away, but he's got 4 or 5 years left. So he's going to make an impact now, because I don't want Matt Lodge to look back in 5 years going, I blew it. I blew my career. I'm now out working 9 to 5. Not there's anything wrong with that, but I'm just saying this is his chance, because if he blows this one, he's out there in the workforce or lining up at the SES.
Where does Victor Radley fit into this good Sydney Roosters culture after his incident where he was caught on camera during State of Origin 2 making a sexual gesture to teammate Joe Suliali?
Well, Robbo was actually not necessarily sticking up for Victor Radley, but basically put the onus back onto the TV networks and said that they need to be careful of what they are broadcasting. Because in the past, Trent Robinson has told Victor Radley to pretty much grow up and not behave like an idiot. But in this instance, he did say that the TV networks need to just be a bit more careful of what they are showing if they are going to be looking into the inner sanctum of the dressing sheds.
It's a fine line, isn't it, guys, between what they can, what they should, and what they shouldn't actually broadcast. I mean, it's a great insight. We love it. It's come into the game about, 8, 10 years ago, Ryan? And it is, as I said, an insight which takes us into the dressing room. So, look, who do you blame here? Do you blame Victor Radley or do you blame Channel 9? The bottom line is Radley was the one that misbehaved. He shouldn't have done it. It was silly. I hope it doesn't go any further. We discussed it yesterday. Slap over the wrists. Move on. Don't do it again, Victor.
Well, I can remember I was covering the rugby league for Fox Sports when we first brought in, I guess, the insightful cameras at halftime. And very early in those days, do you remember when Dez ripped the door off at
Parramatta
Manly?
Stadium.
At Parramatta Stadium. And there was a lot of fallout from that. I can tell you from behind the scenes that Manly weren't happy. But that was pretty much the start of, you know, being the fly on the wall. And it's great insight for the fans. But I remember thinking at that moment back then where I sort of thought, I kind of understand why Manly's angry, because there is something about the locker room. It in many respects should be a place of privacy for those players to contain their message, to contain their focus. But I guess in the modern professional era of sport, it's more about the access, what the fans get, and the bang for the buck for the broadcaster.
That is their office, to be fair. It'd be like a camera being in this studio right now. We'd probably be saying, well, I don't particularly want a camera on me because we're working. Having said that, Victor knew the camera was on him because you could clearly see he looks up at the TV inside the room, sees himself on TV, and then he made the crude gesture. So that was the silly part. Yeah. Had Victor been looking away, you maybe could have argued that he didn't know it was on him and what happens in the dressing room should stay there. Mm. But he knew the camera was on him, and that's what made it different.
Well, as far as the cricket is concerned, it was a wild old day. Day two of the first test between Australia and Sri Lanka. They had a stand there in Gaul. It collapsed. The corrugated iron roof was ripped off there. The winds were so fierce. So they lost the entire first session due to wild weather and the final 20 minutes due to bad light. But Australia reached stumps on day two at 8 for 313. It means they had a lead of 101 runs. Great to see Cameron Green, who doesn't have much experience on these types of turning decks. He was the star of the day, 77 off 109 balls. Alex Carey added 45 off 47. So Green, gee, what a test career he's had. 13 tests. He's now been dismissed for 84, 74, 74, 79 and 77. So he's still to get that elusive 100. But by gee, when you consider that he's terrific with the ball in hand as well, what a future this young man has.
Yeah, and he was certainly the star of the day. And as you said, 23 runs short of that maiden test century. I must say, when you're watching the footage, the best moment had to be when Pat Cummins belted the ball out of the ground and onto the road. And he's actually ended up not doing too badly himself. He's not out for 26 and will return to the stumps today. Australia lead by 101 runs. But as you mentioned, Ryan, that stand, that collapse, it was lucky that no one was in it because on day one, that was actually jam-packed with spectators. So a wild and crazy delay to day two.
What did we make of the Steve Smith reaction to being run out? There's a lot of criticism on social media.
A lot of people weren't happy
media.
About it, yeah.
I've got to be honest, we all love Steve Smith. He's an absolute legend, and he'll go down as potentially one of the top five Australian batsmen of all time. But he does have this habit of blowing up deluxe every time he gets out, whether it's a decision, he doesn't want to go. Yesterday he blew up at Usman Khawaja, who, I might add, it was Usman's call, and he got it wrong. But I just thought Smithy overreacted.
He did.
And to do that on the field, and to almost berate a teammate, it was just a bad look.
Yeah, I agree. And there was certainly a couple of texts that came through yesterday on the text line suggesting the same thing. And, you know, we know, well, I was about to say we know Steve Smith's character, but after Sandpapergate, I suppose some people might question that. But he is a very quiet, humble sort of a guy. But, you know, I guess when he gets out there in the middle, he reaches fever pitch at times. But, yeah, I agree with you. It probably wasn't
just
a great
look.
Just
like a sore loser when he's there shaking his head, shrugging his shoulders, you know, firing up at Khawaja.
We all love that fight in Steve Smith, that bulldog Aussie spirit. But there is that line in the sand where you just have to sometimes accept the umpire's decision and walk without sort of half by blowing up, shaking your head and carrying on.
I tell you who was on his best behaviour, albeit uncharacteristic, yesterday was Nick Kyrgios.
Yes.
He steamrolled Serbia's Filip Krajinovic, 6-2, 6-3, 6-1, less than 90 minutes. So he's been copping it from all quarters after his first round, and it was the quiet little lamb, Nick.
Yeah, he had like one little blow up at a spectator for coughing too loud and had an altercation with the linesman, but that was very well behaved
indeed,
in Nick Kyrgios terms. But he then withdrew from the doubles with Thanasi Kokkinakis because he wants to make his singles a priority, and that was off the back of winning that round two.
Yeah,
and Nick, when he wins, Ryan, like that, and he behaves like that, you'd think there'd be some correlation in Nick's brain thinking, if I don't blow up, things go a lot more smoothly.
But that's it doesn't.
He gets me every
but
time.
I loved
like
it though,
he'll have a couple of games like that and I'm like, yeah, I'm back on team, and then he'll blow up again. I'm like, no, I'm off.
But I loved it because he said, I just wanted to remind everyone that I'm pretty good.
So, he is good.
You're great.
He's brilliant. Naturally, he's one of the best in the world. Mm. He didn't want to play that doubles from the start. I know he was blowing up before the tournament because doubles have gone to five sets. Mm. Is that right, Jamie? I think it is, yeah. I think the doubles has gone to five sets. So he didn't want to play in the first place. So it doesn't surprise me that he has withdrawn.
In other games, Jason Kubler, he's on his way to a straight sets win over Denis Novak, but bad light stopped play there at 5-4 in the third set. Jordan Thompson lost in straight sets to Stefanos Tsitsipas. So Tsitsipas now plays Nick Kyrgios in the third round. So that will be an absolutely cracking match. Alex de Minaur is currently on court against Jack Draper. That is one set apiece at the moment, but de Minaur is two love up in the third set. So Demon Orr, he was hot favourite for that match. He's coming back after a bit of a slow start. Nyla Tomljanovic is through to the third round after a straight sets win over Catherine Harrison. And she'll now play 13th seed Barbara Krajicova in the third round of Wimbledon. Speaking earlier about television coverage and access to games, it was interesting to read an exclusive article in the Daily Telegraph from Ben Horn that Channel 7 has launched federal court action against Cricket Australia in a sensational bid to terminate its $450 million TV rights deal with the cricket. So the proceedings that have been filed in federal court against Cricket Australia cite repeated breaches of its six-year media rights contract relating to quality and standards. You go through the article, there's a lot of legal jargon that you probably don't understand, but I guess the synopsis is that the snapshot is that they're not happy with the quality of cricket that's being served up in the BBL, it seems to be, that that standard has dropped and Channel 7 aren't getting bang for their buck for what they agreed on and what they paid for.
Well, it was off the back. Remember, Steve Smith wasn't allowed to play in the BBL, and that was when things really started to fire up, because if you're not going to provide your best talent, then eyeballs aren't going to be watching your coverage. So you can understand, but it's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out in court.
Well, during the summer, when Stuart Clark were on here, we were getting a lot of texts from people that had just dropped off the BBL. They felt like it was too much cricket, you know, games every day, and the quality was, you know, was second rate, was the feedback we were getting then.
I can't watch it, to be honest, guys, and I love my cricket, but to me it's just full of pumped-up grade cricketers. They're good cricketers, they're very competent cricketers, but it's not going to get my eyeballs watching the television every night. It's too much of it. I did notice that Seven, in that story, Ryan, said recent attempts to resolve the long-running dispute have failed. So this isn't just started now. This has been going on for a while now. And you can't help but think, in the end, there might be a dramatic split. I even noticed Cricket Australia released a statement saying that Channel 7's decision and their action was astonishing. So it seems like the gap between these two organisations is quite wide, and it doesn't seem to be closing at all.
Now, Bulldog, you've written a story in today's Daily Telly, which I had a little chuckle about it, because it just shows how hard Sam Burgess is working for pretty much getting nothing. So it's called "Why Coaching's a Snack for Sam. Humble Pie and a Coke is All He Wants, and Only for Home Games." So this is talking about Sam Burgess's coaching contract, where he is getting paid with a Garlo's pie, and in brackets, of his choice. He can get a soft drink of his choice, but he's only allowed at home games. And I just loved it, because was it the CEO that said Sam is often tries to get two pies, and they say, no, you're starting at the bottom, you can have one. And it's just, I just love that story.
Yeah, I spoke to Sam yesterday and I said, "Are they looking after you up there?" He said, "I get a pie and a soft drink." And I said, "Yeah, of course you are, Sam. What's the truth?" He said, "No, it's actually in my contract, written." So I rang the Axeman president, and he actually emailed me the contract, and there it is in black and white. One Garlo's pies, flavour of your choice, and one soft drink, flavour of your choice.
How can you write a clause in a contract with a straight face when you're writing that?
Apparently what happened, Ryan, was that there was a gap in the contract where you almost have to put something down in terms of remuneration. He wasn't being paid, so they said, okay, let's just chuck it in. So Sam did say in the story, and I quote him, saying, "Every day, every home game, though, I straight down after it, and I pick up my Garlo's pie, and I pick up my can of Coke, and off he goes." But it's a lovely story, I think, in that it proves that superstars like Sam often have the game at heart, even though we criticise them and we have a dig at players over many years. But he's actually doing it because he loves rugby league. He wants to grow the game up there on the North Coast, and he's doing a terrific job. The Axemen, I might add, too, they've been out for 2 years. They're back this year, played eight games. They've won seven. They're leading the top of the table. So Sam doing a really good job up there. Just outside Coffs Harbour.
Yeah, very nice story. I actually took a Garlo's pie yesterday. I feel like I need to take $5 off my invoice now for Tabcorp after this week. He's a very humble man, Sam Burgess. Big show coming up today.
Do they come in on Friday as well in the
building? No, just Thursdays. They'll just be restocked. No, they'll be restocked. So there will Nick's be something probably out there. Restocked them in.
So basically, you read out all of those ads on a Sunday with Ray Thomas, so we can eat the pies on a Thursday.
Yeah, and I actually took one round to my dear mum yesterday, and she ate my sausage roll, so I didn't get to have anything.
And you've been waiting for it all morning.
Exactly.
Oh.
Now, listeners, exciting news. The Sticky Wings Multi is here this week, and Blocker is back. He's back after his success last week with the Sticky Wings Multi, so he's trying to keep that 100% record intact. We will be unleashing the Sticky Wings Multi this hour. A big show. Adam Pengelly will be joining us. Kevin Anderson, Racing Minister, will also join us to talk about some big news with the Kosciuszko. Roger Rashid with tennis. Brad Davidson will find us some winners for the weekend. Gary the Wiz Freeman, what a legend he is of rugby league with the Panthers and Roosters going head-to-head tonight. We thought we'd get a man that's connected to both of those clubs and talk all things rugby league. Phil Moss will join us as well. So it's a big show on the Big Sports Breakfast. Jamie Rogers, Dean Ritchie and Ryan Phelan with you this morning. Just checking some scores from overnight. In the AFL, the Brisbane Lions, they bounced back from last week's 64-point loss to Melbourne to hammer the Western Bulldogs 108-67. The Western Bulldogs certainly had the better of that game early, but they overpowered them late, the Brisbane Lions. So a strong win for them, and they're looking very much premiership contenders this season. In the tennis, the scores there, Nick Kyrgios had a straight sets win, a very easy one over Philip Kryonovic. Jason Kubler, he was on his way to a straight sets win as well, but bad light stopped play. He's 5-4 in the third set. Jordan Thompson lost in straight sets to Stefanos Tsitsipas, who now plays Nick Kyrgios. Alex de Minaur is currently on court, and it's 1-1 against Jack Draper at the moment. Isla Tomljanovic, she had a win as well. So the Aussies, all in all, a pretty good day there on day two of Wimbledon. Now, in the golf, the John Deere Classic, JT Poston is the leader there at 9-under. It's been a pretty quiet day for the Aussies. Cam Davis is the best of them at 3-under, tied for 13th. Mark Hensby, 1-under. Brad Jewett, even. Cameron Percy, even. John Senden, 1-over. And Greg Chalmers, 7-over. So not a lot of the big names stepping out in the John Deere Classic, but that is the leaderboard at the moment. Looking forward to a big weekend of sport. Obviously, the rugby test over in Perth is going to be a big one between Australia and England. And Jamie, the Super Netball title also takes place this weekend.
Yeah, plenty's going on over in Perth. They had Origin, Rugby, and now the Super Netball finals. That's Sunday night, West Coast Fever up against Melbourne Vixens. And this was the two most dominant teams this year. And if you look at the head-to-head, Vixens won the two regular season matches, but the Fever won their major semi-final. And Fever are the favourites to end their premiership drought. They haven't seen one at all since the Super Netball was formed in 2017. They played in two losing grand finals, but you go back 25 years of the previous tournament where you see a WA team having won any sort of silverware. So it's going to be interesting, especially off the back that, I mean, West Coast Fever ended up getting, would have had the home ground advantage anyway, but there was all that uproar and the big outcry that the Super Netball sold the grand final over to Perth. So anyway, it'll be very interesting to see it all come to an end.
Who wins, Jamie?
I'm going to go Melbourne Vixens.
Why? Okay.
Well, just off the back of the watching their head-to-head performances throughout the year, and I know the Fever won the major semi-final and Vixens were lucky to get through after their game with the Giants, but I just think they will be ready to go. They know how to win a premiership, and I think they'll do it again.
We were talking earlier about Victor Radley and cameras in the locker rooms. We've got this on the text line from Booty. Morning, guys. I'm sorry, but the locker rooms should be a no-go zone for cameras. We don't see them in the women's game, so it should work both ways. And remember, these are young men. They can't be on the ball all the time. Give them a break. That from Bouty. A lot of people also weighing in about Steve Smith. This one from John from Moorbank. Steve Smith carries on like a spoiled brat on too many occasions, and that rubs many people up the wrong way. That's John, and there's a few others with Steve Smith, but many of them I can't read out. They're that, I guess, vitriolic towards Steve Smith, so a lot of people not happy with his behaviour. This is a nice one. Hey, guys, looking forward to heading to New Zealand to watch the Warriors and Wade's first home game. I'm assuming that's Wade Egan, the hooker for the Warriors. First home game after 50 games for them. Wade signed Wade's dad. That would be quite emotional, the homecoming for the New Zealand Warriors. We saw them when they arrived this week. They had traditional ceremonies welcoming them back. It's great to see New Zealand having their rugby league team back again. And, gee, when you wrap your head around it, I know you can make the case they're professional sports people. You have to deal with the good and the bad. But to be based in Queensland for as long as they were, away from their families and their comfort zone, it was a big ask for the New Zealand Warriors.
But even things like Bulldog, you hear about Sean Johnson, who had to watch his little girl, who's now 8 months, basically grow up over FaceTime. So that's when you really see that toll of perhaps their performances might now lift, that they actually get to go back home, be around their loved ones, play in front of their home crowd. That would add so much to them. And that's why I reckon good luck to the West Tigers. Of all the times to go and play the New Zealand Warriors, it's going to be a tough task back there at home after 2.5 years.
They're professional, excuse me, players, but they're still human beings. Mm. They still have family. They still have responsibilities to family. It's not that simple as just saying, oh, they're professional. They're not robots. They're not made of concrete. They've got souls. And, you know, clearly being away from family, albeit a lot of family did come this year to Redcliffe, but generally over the past 2 years, you know, they've been away from loved ones. And that's difficult to take. And some players, JR, who signed with the Warriors, who are Australian-born, have played 2 years and never been in New Zealand. It's the absurd situation.
I'm going to be away from my kids for 2 weeks when I go to the UK to go and swim the English Channel. Even that, it pains me to think. Then that's just 2 weeks. So I just couldn't imagine these players that haven't seen their family as much as they would like to over 2.5 years.
Hopefully that emotion translates into a victory for the Warriors. You would think that it would lift them a long way, but goodness me, their form's pretty poor. You would hope that that might click them back into gear against
West Tigers.
Or
does it go the other way because you're so worked up and so excited that you end up making mistakes? Or,
well, it is a sellout, and it comes just a week after the Kiwis-Tonga test match was a sellout. So in terms of rugby league in general, the last week's been very good in New Zealand, given, of course, the game must have slid somehow, some way in the last 2 years when you got no games. But I mentioned the other day, Ryan, you know, sponsorship, membership, attendances, general interest, all those must have dropped when you don't have your team playing at home. They're not even in the country. So it's a big task for the Warriors to get their foothold back in there. All the time they've been here, of course, the rugby union is being played, and you know, rugby union is number one over there. It's the king. So it's a big assignment facing the Warriors in coming months, coming years, to re-establish themselves as, you know, I guess you could say fairly, the second winter sport in the country.
Well, the Sticky Wings BSB Multi is back this week, and it's back with a blocker.
Oh,
because
the big man.
We had the big man on the show yesterday.
He
and
wanted
Jamie,
to spit it out yesterday, didn't he?
He wanted to. We
you
had
said tomorrow. He kept saying, oh, why tomorrow?
Had to contain him. It was a hard thing
well,
to do.
Well, he wanted to be in person because he's not here today. We've got to do it on his
so
behalf.
So, Jamie, he won last week, didn't he?
Yes, what
$13. $13 he lobbed last week, Steve Blocker wrote. So he's at 100%. So the pressure's been on him to deliver again, and he has delivered for us. So this is his Sticky Wings BSB Multi this week. Tonight, the Roosters at the Lions, so +15.5. So the Roosters can still lose, but as long as they don't lose by any more than 15 points. Saturday, Flemington Race 8, number 12, Tuvalu, has to finish top two. And on Sunday, the Raiders at the line, -2.5. So they have to win and win by more than 3 points, the Raiders. So once again, the Roosters tonight, +15.5. Flemington tomorrow, Tuvalu in race 8, number 12, to run top two. And Sunday, the Raiders, -2.5. And that multi is paying $11. So that is up on the TAB website right now and the app. All you need to do is go to sports, click on today's offers, and at the very top you will see Big Sports Breakfast Best, and you will see that multi there paying $11. What do you think about that?
I have this vision of Blocker having a bet on the races. You know when they roll up your form guide and you give it a little whack on your hip in the tab? Could you imagine the hysterics if it won? The excitement of the big fella.
Well,
it burst. Tulu
is the favourite in that race. So he's gone a favourite, but $11 is pretty good value.
It's absolutely very good value. Mm. Do you reckon Blocker would be an early crower? You know, like he'd watch a horse race and Tuvalu, as it normally does, it normally leads, right? So it'll be out in front of you. Oh, this is home. This is home. Look at this. It's like, Block, there's still another 1,000 metres to go in the race. No, this is going to win.
Oh, I love his excitement. It's wonderful, isn't it?
There you go. So Roosters, how do you reckon they'll go? I mean, he wanted to originally tip them to win 1-12. So it's 15.5 start, which means that they can, you know, still lose to Penrith, but they need to keep it a tight game. Do you think it'll be a tight game?
Oh, gee. I like the Roosters, and I think they're a very good football team, but Penrith are another level. Mm. They are so far ahead of everybody else. Mm. Confirmed again last night with team number two getting well beaten. They're on another playing field.
But I just feel, that far ahead of the field. If you're going to back the Roosters to win, this is the week to do it because of the potential, the fatigue factor, like what we saw with Melbourne last night. I know Craig Bellamy said that wasn't an excuse, but could fatigue possibly come into play this weekend?
Oh, 100%.
And I know some rep players, obviously, in the Roosters side, but there were far more for the Penrith side. So perhaps if the Roosters are going to get a win, this is the week they'll do it.
I said earlier this year, JR, if, and it's a big if, Penrith go on to make the grand final, and at this point it's looking fairly good odds, at what point do we start to say that Penrith are one of the all-time great club sides, or one of the great club sides of at least the modern era? If they make the grand final, that's three successive grand finals. If they jag two, I think we have to start looking at them as being one of the finest teams of the modern era.
It's funny, talking about fatigue factor, I never forget Gordy Tallis one day telling me when I said, what's it like backing up from Origin, you know, with the fatigue factor? He said, if you play on a Wednesday, but you're on a Friday and Saturday night game, he said, you're fine. He said, it's almost like your body is still in combat mode and you haven't sort of had too much downtime for your body to start aching and to get sore. He said, but if you play on a Sunday, he said, you'd notice a big difference because there is a lot of, I guess, rest and downtime where your body can have those aches and pains starting to creep in, which I thought was an interesting insight. So maybe the fact, if you're to go by that theory, that Penrith are closer to when they last played Sunday night, maybe than a Sunday night game. It's an interesting theory. I mean, that's coming from one of the game's best who it was battle hard at Origin level.
Yeah, I've heard that before, actually. A lot of players say, I'd rather play
straight after
than let the body sort of seize up, so to speak. I did have a chuckle here, guys. No name on this text. Hey, guys, I'm going to the bank today to pay off my house. I was smart enough to put a swear jar in Bellyache's coaching box last night. That's very, very That's clever. Funny. Could you imagine him last night? Oh, goodness. There was a vision of him at the end. He had both hands on both cheeks and he looked the most miserable man in the world, Craig.
Well, it's interesting. You know, we've been talking this morning about cameras, you know, in the locker room, but I guess that's been another insight with the cameras in the coaching box. I know this is nothing new, but gee, it makes for great entertainment. Naturally, the cameras are always focusing on the box when it's, you know, most coaches, but in particular when there's a Des Hasler, when there's a Craig Bellamy, those more animated coaches, it makes for great theatre, which I'm sure those coaches don't enjoy too much.
Yeah, we've got to remember too, guys, and I think it's very pertinent to mention that the broadcast deal in rugby league is worth $1.9 billion. Mm. That's a lot of money. Without that money, the game is gone.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. So for that money, you know, the broadcasters have a right to put cameras in the most strategic places they think will give value to the viewers. Mm. So, yes, I agree. There's a lot of people on the text line saying the sanctity of the dressing room shouldn't be interfered with by cameras, but all the money that comes into rugby league, the most money in terms of stakeholders that come into rugby league is broadcasting. Mm. And that's a lot of money, $1.9 billion. So whether we like it or not, we really have to look after Fox and Channel 9.
Yeah, this one, regarding the locker room cameras, why don't the TV networks have a delay just like live radio has a delay? This would put the onus back on the TV networks to ensure that only savoury content goes to air, which is ultimately their responsibility. That's from DK. Thanks, DK. Look, I don't have a specific answer, but I just know when you've got outside broadcasts and you have, what would they have, upwards of 10 to 12 cameras coming in their live feeds, you've just got a director switching from one camera to the next. It's like juggling balls in an air. So I think it would be a much more difficult task in a live broadcast to be able to do that. But thanks for your text message, and keep them coming in. The SMS 0419 767 272, and taking your calls on the open line number as well, 13 53 53. Well, you may have seen the news yesterday. The Wallabies have picked their oldest debutante this century to face England on Saturday. 33-year-old Brumbies lock Caden Neville will pack down in his first scrum, his first cap in the opening game of the three-test series for Australia. He was in the Australian squad a decade ago, but until now, he's actually never made it on the field. So he's the oldest Wallaby to make his debut since Tion Strauss in 1999, and the third oldest since the Second World War. But obviously, he's been playing very well for the Brumbies, so a well-deserved call-up. Quade Cooper will wear the number 10, partnering with Nick White. So they're reunited for the first time since leading the Wallabies to five straight test wins back in 2021. Taniela Tupou has been ruled out, of course, one of the most marketable stars of the Wallabies lineup. The Wallabies are favourites, $1.70 over England, $2.15. England certainly in recent times have a much better record over Australia, but it seems as though their form has swung around, particularly in the last 12 months. It's an old foe, Australia versus England, and we always get pretty excited, particularly in the cricket, you know, when we're taking on England. Rugby, it's certainly been on a bit of a downslide over the last sort of decade. I think it's fair to say, at the very least, you know, probably, you know, yeah, I think that's a fair assessment to make. Will you watch Bulldog, the rugby on Saturday? And are you excited about taking on the old enemy?
Not really, if you want me to be honest. No, I'm not. And I love my rugby. I support my local rugby team on the northern beaches of Sydney. I grew up playing rugby. I used to love the Ella brothers, Michael Hawker, Roger Gould. All those great players, but I look through the Wallaby side now, I don't know any players. And please don't start on the text line bagging me, because I'm not bagging rugby. I just don't involve myself in top-level rugby anymore. I wouldn't watch a Super Rugby game for 5 years.
Well, I used
and
to,
is that a sad indictment or the game?
It's a very common thought. It seemingly is skewed towards a more private, sort of school-educated audience nowadays. I used to be obsessed with rugby during the Super 12, even in the early Super 14 days. Where it sort of lost me is the over-officiating. I don't understand what a lot of the penalties are for now. The too many red cards are coming out. You know, it's and I think it's a cautionary tale for any sport that if you tinker with the traditions and the rules too much, you can alienate your audience. Keep it simple, stupid, I think, is a really good model for sport, because I think that's something that rugby's gone away from a little bit. Look, I will watch, because I hope that rugby is on a bit of a resurgence, and it feels as though it's maybe on a bit of an upward turn. Particularly, I like Dave Rennie as the coach for the Wallabies. I think he can maybe instill some real mongrel in this Aussie lineup. So hopefully, you know, there might be a bit of a resurgence and some good results for Australia. Jamie, will you watch on Saturday night?
I probably will, actually. I'll be home with the boys. Dave's on a boys' weekend, so it'll be me at home with the boys. So actually, I probably will have it on.
One of the problems rugby's got, I think, guys, is that the rule makers live in the north of England, or in the northern hemisphere, rather. And they love all the penalty goals and they love the field goals. It's part of the
culture.
Well,
that's where a lot of
there.
It changed when Johnny Wilkinson was playing for England, and, you know, during that World Cup. And that's where it really started to change.
But we, as in Australia, we can't change the rules. The rules at international level are made over there in the Northern Hemisphere. So as much as I'm sure Rugby Australia at times must think, I'd love to get rid of this, and this, because we're getting left behind here. You could argue that rugby's become the third or fourth most popular sport in Australia now. It's slid a long way. But they just can't do it. They don't have that power at international level just to make changes. Where rugby league, for example, which is based essentially in Australia, if they don't like a rule, they just change it. Bang, it's done, fixed.
Mm.
Where union don't have that luxury. And for that, I feel a bit sorry for them.
But also, I don't feel like they're covered as much as what we would see in rugby league. You know, there's pages and pages and pages of articles about the rugby league. So, Bulldog, you can go back to the Daily Telegraph and tell them to start covering rugby union a lot more, because that's half the problem, is you don't read about it. So people don't often know that it's on or know some of the players, as you just said.
Yeah, it doesn't get a lot of coverage in mainstream media these days, which...
Mm. Sad.
You know, I tell you what, generally mainstream media will know what works and what doesn't in terms of stories online. They get all the traffic data every day, and I don't think rugby tracks that well in terms of page views and subscriptions in terms of online.
Interesting insight. Don't forget the Sticky Wings BSB Multi is up. Blocker's doing it again this week, trying to keep his 100% record intact. The Multi is Friday, Roosters at the Line, plus 15.5. Saturday, Flemington Race 8, number 12, Tuvalu, top 2. And Sunday, Raiders at the Line, minus 2.5. That Multi is paying $11, and it's available on the TAB website right now. Just go to today's offers in the sports column, and you'll see it there at the top, the BSB Sports Multi. We'll take a break. The news is next. Plenty more to come up this morning. Stay with us. Yes, Manly, a 36-30 win over Melbourne last night. Manly fans rejoicing this morning, albeit it was a bit of a funny old game. They dominated for about 74 minutes last night, the Manly Seagulls, and then Melbourne scored a glut of tries to flatter the scoreline a little bit in the last sort of 6 or 7 minutes of that game. But Manly getting the job done, and it was a bit of an Origin hangover of sorts for the Melbourne Storm there last night. In the tennis this morning, live action with Alex de Minaur currently on court, and it's 3-2 in the fourth set. So de Minaur is on track to win that particular match. Nick Kyrgios also a winner in straight sets last night, 6-2, 6-3, 6-1. Jason Kubler, he's on his way to winning before bad light stopped play. It's 5-4 in the third set there. Jordan Thompson lost to Stefanos Tsitsipas, who now plays Nick Kyrgios. And Ila Tomljanovic also through. In the cricket, Australia reached day two at stumps at 8 for 313, a lead of 101 runs. The star of the show there yesterday was Cameron Green, 77 off 109 balls. Alex Carey as well, 45 off 47 balls. So in a dazzling form. In the AFL last night, the Brisbane Lions bounced back from last week's loss to beat the Western Bulldogs, 108-67. So there's just some of the results that are happening around Australia overnight and internationally as well. The Sticky Wings Multi is up. Blockers Multi this week. The Roosters at the Line, 15.5 tonight against Penrith. Tomorrow, race 8, number 12, Tuvalu to finish top 2. And on Sunday, the Raiders at the Line, minus 2.5. That Multi is paying $11. You can get that on the TAB website right now. So go to the sports icon and today's offers, and you'll find the BSB Multi right there.
Our boys, last night in the basketball, the Boomers down China 76-69, and we had 6 debutants. It was in front of more than 8,000 spectators in Melbourne. The wheels did fall off a little bit in the third quarter, but Australia did hold on to get the win. So they're now 4-0 in their World Cup qualification. They'll face Japan tonight and then China again on Sunday. And just while we're talking about basketball, guys, some news has come through this morning that Kevin Durant has requested a trade away from the Nets. As a result, their championship price for next season has now gone out to $11. And I guess his time with the Nets didn't really quite go to plan. Like, it was always that the thought that he and Kyrie Irving would establish themselves as this like dynamic duo, and instead they rarely played together. We know that Kyrie was very anti-COVID vaccine, which meant he couldn't play for most of the season, and it does now look as though their relationship is frayed. So apparently at the top of his wish list are the Suns and Heat. He basically wants to go where he can win another championship.
And he could probably go wherever he wants to. He's obviously one of the greatest players in the game, MVP as well. well?
Well, it's going to be where the Nets will get the best value and result for him. So whilst that those teams are on his wish list, I can say that no doubt Nets phones will be running hot with teams that will want him.
Now, looking at the rugby league this weekend, and give us a call as well, 13 53 53 is the open line number. I know we were going through it yesterday, but might just look at the remaining games in the NRL after last night's win to Manly. And remember, it is beanies for brain cancer round this round. So go to your local IGA store and you can buy a beanie. They look pretty good as well. They're sort of in a bit of a brownie colour. Bellyache was wearing one last night. And all funds go to the Mark Hughes Foundation. You can go to the website to donate there as well. So there's been the big three trek. We had Chris Lawrence on earlier in the week, didn't we, talking about the big three trek, and a lot of former players and also celebrities are walking from NRL headquarters. I think they left on, was it
Wednesday? Tuesday.
And walking all the way to McDonald Jones Stadium where they'll walk in tonight. So that's the next game we'll see tonight, Newcastle versus Gold Coast at McDonald Jones Stadium, that game at 6 o'clock tonight. So Daniel Saifidi will make his return from injury via the bench. So he will back up. Gee, but, you know, stars or not, they're going to miss, obviously, their fullback in Kalyn Ponga, who won't back up from State of Origin. What did you think of that game? It's two teams that are pretty hard to catch this season, aren't they?
Yeah, bitterly disappointing. Both sides, who would have been quietly eyeing a top eight spot, particularly the Gold Coast, Ryan, I think. The resurgence up there, which has been building for a couple of years under Justin Holbrook, who I think is a very, very good coach, it stalled badly this year, and this is a real setback for them. I think that the momentum that they had built has stopped abruptly. Look, they do get David Fifita back tonight, which is a big inclusion for them. I think also it's, you know, maybe time for David Fifita to perform to the next level. He's on big money. It's over $1 million a year. He's damaging when he wants to be, and when he scores a try, it's like 10 pins. He just bowls them out of the way. But he just doesn't do it enough, for my liking, consistently. And I think it's time that David Fifita really started to get to that next level and start earning that massive pay packet that he was brought to the Gold Coast to play for.
What did you make of Adam O'Brien's comments yesterday, where he's basically blamed the players of more their attitude in pre-season for the issues that they're having now? Can you give us a little bit more insight into what might have happened in the pre-season or what fueled these comments?
Yeah, I was a bit surprised to hear those, Jay. I'm not exactly sure what he was referring to, whether it's individually. You know, that is the coach's job, to get them right in the pre-season. I think Adam O'Brien, like Justin Holbrook's, a very good coach. But some of the losses this year by Newcastle have been unacceptable. With the Knights, I just query how they get out of the hole that they're in. They look like they're a side that's on their backsides in terms of confidence. And once you're in that rut, it's very, very difficult to get out. No Ponga tonight. I think Gold Coast will win tonight. And if they win, that's going to heap more pressure on the Knights. And I think there's a few fans up there who have been incredibly loyal and turn up every week, and there's 20,000 of them that sit there, rain, hail or shine. I think there's just a little bit of scuttlebutt on social media that they are getting a little bit fed up with this lack of consistency and, at times this year, lack of effort from the Newcastle players.
You say rain, hail or shine, and to probably make that game seem even uglier, it is raining in Newcastle at the moment. It's 14 degrees up there, so they're probably going to be playing on a soggy deck, and that's going to be the case for the Penrith game against the Roosters tonight as well. And I wonder whether that makes Blockers multi, 15 and a half, maybe even more attractive, whether it does turn into a bit of a slog. You sort of wouldn't necessarily think that would be the case with the silky skills on show with the Penrith Panthers, and all of their Origin stars are backing up. The interesting one, which you wrote about in your article this week, is Joey Manu switching to the halves, obviously with Luke Kirry out with the concussion. It's going to be really interesting to see how he plays in that role, particularly coming up against the best halves combination in the competition.
Yeah, I think he'll be given a role of just go and play some eyes up footy. Whatever's in front of you, react. Don't play to too much structure. Get the ball in his hands and let him play some footy. Joey Manu is one of the most creative players in the NRL, and I think that's the reason Robbo's brought him in. closer to the action to try to generate something, because their halves all year with Keary and Sam Walker have been good without being brilliant. I think all year they've patiently waited for them to kickstart their season, and it hasn't quite worked that way. So I think this is a bid by Robbo to really start to move. They need some momentum, the Roosters. They just seem to be plateaued virtually the whole year. You know, is, as Jamie said, is tonight the night they pull off the upset, Manu plays well, and their season starts to get a roll on? Because I wouldn't say it's sliding away, but at this point in time, you can't think that the Roosters will be top four. And if you're not there, you don't win the comp.
You're a Roosters supporter. Did you tip them yesterday?
I did, yes.
You did, so you're sticking solid.
I am sticking solid. I just think if they're going to get a win, it'll be this week with the Penrith Panthers players potentially fatigued off the back of Rep Brown. And I know that there are some players from the Roosters that are backing up, but I just think there were more from the Penrith Panthers. So this could be the time. At $6, though, that's the longest price the Roosters have been since 2011.
Yeah,
it's just
so
remarkably
amazing. See, you're right, $6 the Roosters, okay, and Penrith $1.13. Yeah. I mean, but that's also the respect that we have for the Penrith Panthers, a full-strength Penrith Panthers.
You look at that Penrith side, Ryan and Jamie, you can't help but think that this side is going to be an elite team for another 2, 3, 4 years. They've already been there for 3 years, and the way that they play, the excitement that they bring, they're all young kids. Provided the wheels don't fall off somehow, some way, they will be a powerhouse for another 3, 4 years. That's why I think Cameron Seraldo has rejected the Tigers, and he will re-sign. I think he knows that while Penrith has the roster that they do, they will be successful and his stocks will continue to rise. He'll pick and choose the club he wants. I reckon he'll stay for one more year and monitor the situation. But I think in terms of rushing out, he doesn't need to. He's 37 years old, Cameron Seraldo. As I said, his stocks will continue to rise at Penrith because of the team that they've got, and he will take up the job that he wants in 2, 3, even 4 years.
Keep those SMS coming in, 0419 767 272. The open line number 1353 53, and we'll be taking your calls next. Some good texts coming in. This one, is there a stat kept for the metres gained from penalty touch finders? I think Daly Cherry Evans would make more metres than any other kicker in the game and provides a significant advantage for his team. Best all-round kicker in rugby league. No name on that one. He actually kicked for goal last night, and he didn't have a perfect sheet. That was because Reuben Garrick had to be needled early. He set up a try, I think, on the left side for Saab, and the tackle pretty much drilled him right in the hip, and I think he had to get a needle in the hip. So Cherry Evans kicked pretty much most of the match last night. But off the boot, he does seem to kick more 40-20s than any other player, doesn't he?
He's got that wonderful vision, Cherry. It doesn't have to be the last tackle for Cherry to have a crack at a 40-20. Isn't it funny, though, Ryan, how kicking in rugby league these days has come so far from, say, 15 years ago, where it was just tackle five, kick and hope. Now it's an absolute science how they go about it. Look at Nathan Cleary. Look at Adam Reynolds.
You know who
I'll
add to that?
Cherry Evans.
Matt Burton. His spiral kick at the moment is a different dimension to the game at the moment. That's something that you have to prepare for.
I've never seen a bloke kick like that. I said on the Wednesday show when I popped in, all the years I've covered rugby league, I cannot recall a bloke who strikes the ball cleaner than Matt Burton. It's just extraordinary, the height that he gets on the ball. He's not that big a bloke. It's not like he's a monster. I guess it just comes down to the science and the timing.
Yep. Taking your calls this morning, 1353 53. Let's go to them now. Good morning, Bass.
Good morning, boys. And JR, how are you going?
Very well. What do you got for us?
Boys, if the... The NRL draw, if that isn't the biggest joke in world sport today, I don't know what is. And whoever's responsible for compiling the draw from year to year should be shown the door ASAP. Because, and I'll use the Roosters as an example, in the space of the last 6 or 7 weeks, we've played Parramatta twice and Penrith twice. How do you play anybody twice before you've played everybody once?
Bass, it is an unfair draw, no doubt about it. And the draw makes or breaks coaches' careers. The problem we've got is we've got 16 teams, so if you wanted to have 2 full rounds, which would be ideal and the most fair format you can have, that's 30 rounds plus 4 in the finals. The game can't sustain 34 rounds. It just wears the players out. So
I understand.
It's just too hard, Bass. I hear you. I just don't know what the answer is, though, mate.
Well, Well, let's start off with playing everybody once before we play everybody twice.
Yep, I get that.
And if you want to bring the sides back to the field, like the sides that finished in the top eight the previous year, they should play each other twice and let the sides that aren't doing so well from the previous year to try and bring them back to the field, play them each other twice. That's probably the fairest system, but as far as I'm concerned...
But aren't you then rewarding teams who have performed poorly the year before?
Well, do you want to... Right now, you've got the top five and everybody else. That's what you've got right now. You have the haves and the have-nots. So how are you going to at least make it look like, you know, a closer competition than it is? It's farcical the way it stands. Honestly, at the beginning of the year, I dare say everybody's top... The picks for the top eight are coming to fruition.
You know what, Bass? I'm not trying to pick a fight with you here, but I think what you say about the draw is spot on. I still think, though, if you're good enough and you have the best roster, you win the comp, okay, whether the draw is there or not.
Okay, explain this to me then. The Roosters' injury or suspensions or, you know, you got a few players out trying to find their feet back from, like, serious knee injuries the year before, playing somebody twice in the space of 4 weeks.
Yeah, no, I agree. The perception out there is ridiculous. You've got teams playing each other twice in 3 to 4 weeks. I thoroughly understand what you're saying. I just don't know a fairer system. The fairer system, as I said, is play each other twice, have two full rounds, but that's not going to happen because we can't have a season going 34 rounds plus trials. It's just too much in terms of wear and tear on the players.
And we're adding extra teams?
We will be, exactly. We're adding extra teams.
Further expansion.
So, as you say, there's another two teams in there. So we're getting further and further away from playing each other twice.
You know, it's like, you know, let's go for money and quantity over quality. Where are you going to sustain the competition? Right now, like we said, we have the haves and the have-nots. You're adding extra teams. There's no quality of player out there that's going to actually make the competition look better. It's going to look worse.
Do you think, Bass, two extra sides, we've got one coming in next year and then more than likely one more, an 18th in, say, 3 to 4 years. Do you think there's the depth out there of player to have another 60 players sucked out of the pool?
No, that's what I'm getting at. There's absolutely not. And the only way you can even make it interesting, I know you've had some amalgamations of clubs. If you split them back to their original clubs and bring back the Bears and add a few like Western Australia and so on and so forth, you can have a two-tier system of 12 teams each. And you know what? If you're languishing on the bottom of the table and you're fighting for your premiership, you know, survival to be in the top tier, at least it makes the end of the season still enjoyable to people because there's still a fight to stay in the top. Relegation, mate, I reckon it'll be brilliant for the NRL.
The only concern I got with promo relegation, Ryan, and I'll ask you about this, if you're in the second tier, would you feel left behind in terms of publicity, in terms of being loved? Could you slide away gradually if you go into that second tier?
I think it depends on how, I guess, hardened on your supporter base is. You know, for instance, there's going to be certain teams that, regardless where they play or what level, you're going to support them. But would a team like the Titans, if they got relegated, would they get people going to the games? I think that's maybe, I guess, an issue with some sort of a relegation. You know?
But Bass just contradicted himself to some degree. He was saying that there's too many sides, but if you want promo relegation, you'd have to almost have that at least two tens, wouldn't you?
Mm.
Or 2 12s. So yes. You have to go up to 20 sides at least to be able to have the 2 10 team
of talent.
And then we've got the same problem we've got, except it's exasperated that 16 goes to 18, 18 goes to 20.
Bass, that's a terrific call. It's an interesting debate, and so much so, we're going to send you a BSB prize pack this morning. That was certainly worthy of that. An interesting school of thought there from Bass this morning. Now, Alex de Minaur has won his second round match at Wimbledon. He dropped the first set 7-5, but then he won 7-6 in the second set, 6-2, 6-3 over local Jack Draper. So our top-seeded Australian is through. So all in all, a pretty good day three there at Wimbledon for our Aussies. keep your text messages coming in, 0419 767 272, and your calls as well. We'll be taking them throughout the show, 13 53 53. The Sticky Wings Multi is up. Blockers Multi is up on the TAB website. It's paying $11, so get involved with that. We've got a big show this morning. Adam Pengelly will be up after the news. We'll be talking tennis with Roger Rashid just after 7:30. Brad Davidson will give us his best bets for the weekend. Kevin Anderson, racing minister, will join us for some big news about the Kosciuszko. And oh, he's always a lot of fun. Gary the Wiz Freeman. It's the Panthers taking on the Roosters tonight. We thought we'd get a player on that played for both sides. Freddie Fittler wasn't available, so we went to the next best thing. No, I'm only kidding, Wiz. Gary Freeman will be on. He is a legend of the game. So Wiz will be on after 8 o'clock. And Mossy, Phil Moss, will join us again to talk football. It's a big, 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 big sports breakfast this morning. Stay with us.